Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. So happy today to have my guest. He is offensive lineman Connor Pay. Connor, it is always good to talk with you. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing great. I'm doing just great.
Quite frankly, I'm not sure why you're not hosting this, because you're in this studio hosting podcasts much more frequently right now than I am. So why aren't you doing this?
I don't know. You know what? I don't really, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I don't host anything, right? Maybe I'll pose a few questions, but the guests definitely carry the show. So I don't have to do much hosting.
Okay, we were told, and this is something I did not know. This is actually good information to have. So the podcast, and we're going to get into all the details of the podcast coming up in a little bit, but you do this with Chase Roberts.
Yeah.
And I've had Chase on this show. We've done an episode of the Deep Blue podcast with Chase. It was brought to our attention before we started recording this that the most listened to episode of this season so far has been Chase Roberts. So I think that information was given to you to put the challenge to you to see if you can have more clicks than Chase.
Was there video for Chase's episode?
I think there may have been people that tuned in thinking it was video and then found out it was audio.
See, that's not fair. They just want to look at him. I'm already at a disadvantage.
Oh, now, don't shortchange yourself. All right, we're going to get it all.
Audio, though, we're good.
Yes.
We're good. Yes.
All right. You and I are both in that situation, so we're fine. We're going to get into the podcast a little bit later. But before we get started, I heard you like to play the drums. Is this accurate?
I do. This is real.
Okay, so who on the team would you want to be in a band with, and what instrument would they play? Like, I assume you would be the drummer. In the band,
I think it goes without saying.
Would you go Phil Collins and be the drummer and the lead singer?
Absolutely not. No, I don't know. This is difficult.
Who would be the lead singer then? Is there somebody that you would want to be the front man?
You know, Jake Retzlaff has always talked about how he'd want to do that, but I think he'd be terrible. I don't know. Actually, you know who actually has a good singing voice? Caleb Etienne.
Really?
Yeah. I might have Big Tree come be our lead singer.
Okay, and what any specific genre of music you guys would want to feature?
Well, I mean, I play rock music, but I don't know if they'd want to play that. Tree would probably be into like jazz or something like that. Or I don't know. He's from New Orleans, so maybe. I don't know.
You could do a little smooth jazz.
Yeah, smooth jazz.
You could be on the drums. You could have somebody playing
the sax.
That's
hard. That is so hard to play on the drums. I don't know if I'd be able to pull that off. That would take a long time for me to learn that. But, yeah, maybe we'll throw Big Tree in the mix.
I like that idea. Did you get a little offensive lineman band, maybe?
Yeah, we could.
Okay, I like that.
Eagles made a Christmas album. We could make one.
Oh, boy. All right, let's get into the 2024 season. And I know you guys are so sick of hearing about this, about the expectations being so low. Do you just roll your eyes every time somebody begins a question with, well, the expectations were low? Do you guys just like, oh, here we go again?
I mean, at this point in the year, it's a little bit, you know, it's a little annoying. Just because we were one win away and one weird little tiebreaker away from playing in the title game. And so, you know, I think that's kind of a thing of the past. You know, the expectation's been set now for what we can do in the Big 12 Conference, and that's going to be the expectation year in and year out from now on. So,
based off of what was accomplished this year, and you're a straight shooter, was this your own expectations doing what you guys did?
Yeah. I fully expected to compete for a championship.
And where did that come from? Coming off of last year, was it the off-season workouts? Was it the players getting together and sort of refocusing and rededicating themselves? Was it new coaches? What was it that gave you guys that type of confidence going into this season?
I think it's all of the above. right? I think the number one thing was definitely the way we attacked the offseason. When you could feel in those first couple weeks of winter workouts, like, okay, this team is going to get it. And obviously, you know, that came with a lot of refocusing as players meetings, revamping the offseason leadership program, which came from the new strength staff. So, like, new coaches played a huge role in that. And obviously, Coach Woods coming in, I wouldn't be at BYU if they hadn't brought him in, you know. And so, obviously, all that plays a role, too. But I think just the dedication we had to the process in the offseason, that's when you could start to feel. And then when we felt the physicality and how well we played in spring ball, and we were like, okay, this team has the pieces. You know, if we can put it together over the summer and you know, have a good fall camp and transition into gameplay.
The good news is, and the end of the story is, that you were able to come back and play. But
yeah.
you missed a chunk of games.
I did,
how
yeah.
hard was that for you to – because you're one of the team leaders – and I know that is something that's an off-the-field thing, but it's also an on-the-field thing.
Yeah.
How did you handle that, not being able to have the on-the-field part of it?
It was hard. It was hard. You know, and I tried to kind of immerse myself in you know, game planning the other team and helping Bruce. And, you know, obviously I was able to, you know, stay distracted doing that. But obviously every time they ran out into the field, you know, it hurt a little bit knowing that I wasn't going to be out, because I had never been hurt before. I don't know how many it was, just 40-something starts at this point, never been injured, never so much as missed a practice in my career here. And then, you know, to miss those four games was hard, because there's this kind of view. It's a weird dichotomy as a leader where it's like you feel like if you're not doing everything everyone else is doing, it's hard to speak up. Because it's like, why would they listen to me? I'm on a scooter right now. And obviously I understand that I have years and things, and there's some – obviously some respect there for my teammates for what I've done in the past, but at the same time it's hard to be as vocal in front of the whole team when they're the ones out there grinding at practice and I'm sitting on my butt because I can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's kind of this weird mental battle where it's like I had to kind of get over that, where it's like, hey, no, you have to be the same person and the same leader you've been all season. Doesn't matter if you're not playing. Like, it's, we've got goals, we got things we got to do. And you know, obviously it was difficult too, because I knew that once I ended up, I was hoping to be back for the Utah game, but you know, it would just, I mean, that was, I would have been, had to been cleared 5 weeks after I broke my foot. That's
yeah.
a little fast. And I was already ahead of schedule to play against Kansas. But when I missed that fourth conference game, I kind of knew that was probably going to have some postseason implications in terms of all Big 12 and things like that. And the conference actually reached out to Kalani to let me know, like, hey, he was an all-conference player, but he just missed too many conference games.
Mm.
And so it's like that hurts a little bit too, you know. It's like, oh man, it would have been great to join, you know, Caleb and Kaim and Waylon on the all Big 12 list. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I missed 4 of the 9 conference games. Like, I get it. But I think, you know, that plays a role too. Like, man, that would have been cool. That would have been something that, you know, would have been a part of BYU forever. You know,
yeah.
when they show the list of all Big 12 players that they've had in the past, you know, in years to come, I'm not going to be on that list anymore.
Right.
You know, and so there's that part too. That's like, oh, that's a little bit sad. Does it mean a lot in the whole scheme of things? Not really. But, you know, it's just one of those things. And so I think there was a few – it was definitely, obviously, much more of a mental battle than a
sure.
physical one, because this type of break, a Jones fracture, super easy surgery, super easy recovery. I'll never have an issue with it again. I have screws in both my feet now. I did the same thing in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I've never had an issue with it since. And so I wasn't worried about any of the physical things, and the training room and the strength staff took great care of me and keeping me in shape to where I could come back and – on essentially 4 days' notice, play a full game against Kansas. And, you know, and so I wasn't worried about that. It was much more of a mental battle for me.
Well, I guess the silver lining in all of this is it allowed you to pursue your true passion, which is podcasting, clearly. So you and Chase, we talked about this at the beginning of the conversation. You and Chase Roberts decided to pitch a Come Follow Me podcast called 2-Point Conversion here at BYU Radio.
Yeah.
You do that in this very studio that we are recording this podcast right now. How did this start? What was the genesis of this?
Honestly, it's probably a little over a year ago now where I went up to Chase in the locker room and I was like, dude, you know what would be kind of fun? And he was like, what? And I was like, we should do a podcast where we do Come Follow Me and bring guests on and do all this other stuff. And he was like, yeah, that's a sweet idea. And so we started planning. But initially, we didn't have any, thought about doing it with BYU Radio or anything. So we started making plans to do it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes for a podcast. And so we were kind of like figuring out, okay, how are we going to manage that? We're like, well, really, the only way we were going to be able to do it was on a Zoom call that we record, one take. You know, we got to get it right because we don't want to deal with all the editing and all this stuff. And that was kind of the idea. And then we were actually getting pretty close to where, like, okay, let's just try it. We'll start a YouTube channel, you know, do a recorded Zoom call and start posting them. And we were at Media Day in Las Vegas, and we were talking about some of our plans, what we were going to do in the next few weeks at a hibachi house at dinner, sitting next to Keith Vorkink, Vice President Vorkink, and obviously Keith oversees BYU broadcasting. And so he kind of overheard us, and he was like, oh, tell me about this podcast idea you guys have. And we were like, okay. So we told him all about it, and he was like, I think BYU Radio would really like this. Like, I think it would be a cool idea. And we were like, okay, what do you want us to do? He's like, give me a little bit. I'm going to reach out to some people. And then he connected us with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through and did the whole breakdown of the podcast, who your audience is, all this stuff. Why is it going to be unique or different? And had a couple meetings with Sam. And then Sam turned us over to Cleon. And
the producer,
the producer.
Senior producer of this very podcast.
Yeah.
I'm looking at him. I'm looking longingly into his eyes right now through the glass.
It is. He's behind the glass right now. So then Sam turned us over to Cleon, and Cleon took over from there and kind of guided us through how we were going to do it, scheduling the studio. Chase and I are the ones who find the guests. And then I'm the one who makes the outlines for the podcast. I say outline loosely.
So you're not just showing up here. You're doing the prep and everything. That's awesome.
It is. And people think it's a ton of work too. It honestly hasn't been that bad. And, fans of it's been 95-5 in terms of this is a great thing versus why are you guys doing a podcast in the middle of the season. And people don't realize that, like, most of the groundwork was already laid months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on purpose so that it wouldn't take time away during the season. We could still do it. Because I'm still going to study my Come Follow Me.
Sure.
Like, what are these people who are criticizing want me to do? Stop studying Come Follow Me?
So why was Come Follow Me, why was that the focus?
I think right now, at least in my opinion, from my observations, the youth are having a harder time connecting with it than the adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't yet have that perspective of what scripture study can do and be for them in their life. And Come Follow Me is obviously a great way to connect that with your family. But I remember being a teenager and my dad gathering us to do Come Follow Me or Family Home Evening. I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta listen to this guy drone on about God for the next 35 minutes, and he's a lawyer, so he can freaking talk for hours. and so I remember that feeling, and I'm like, man, I just would think, if there were some of those players who I knew had strong testimonies of the gospel because I'd seen them speak at firesides or something like that, but we didn't have any access to them and the gospel side of their life. And I just remember thinking, and Chase and I would talk about it, like, man, like, we would have really benefited from that. Like, I'm sure I would have taken my scripture study a lot more seriously, if I had heard some of those players that I looked up to growing up talking about it. And we felt like the Come Follow Me was just a natural, kind of seamless thing to where we wanted this to be a weekly podcast. There's weekly Come Follow Me lessons.
Everybody can sort of follow along.
Right. Right. And it, I think it's something everyone's already doing anyway.
Right.
So it's like, why not, you know, have one more thing that they can add to their come follow me for the week, listening on the way to or from work or to or from school while they're doing their homework. And so it just felt kind of like a seamless transition to make come follow me the framework, because then we can continue this on. We've already got, you know, guests lined up for the new year who are experts in church history when we get into doctrine and covenants and things like that. And so it seemed like a really easy way to keep everything structured, because I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what we should have done or what we would have done if we hadn't used the come follow me framework, where if we were just coming up with ideas on our own every week. I don't know if that would have turned out nearly as good, where we have this, you know, this manual that's been reviewed and approved by the First Presidency and the Quorum of the Twelve. Like they've given us the outline. Now let's expand on it and bring in some cool people to talk about it. So that's kind of the thought behind it.
Based off of the comment you made a minute ago, what would younger you have thought if older you said, oh, by the way, in the future, you're going to be doing a podcast and it's going to be of a spiritual nature?
I would have said no. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. And even when I came back into, you know, taking church more seriously and just deciding to serve a mission, even then I would have been like, no, you know, and it's, I don't know. I don't know. A lot's changed.
How has this helped your own spirituality? The prep and going through this and having these discussions and talking with these guests and scholars and historians, how has that strengthened your own spirituality?
Oh, it's been huge. It's been huge. And it's been all, and I mean, it's been huge for one reason, because we get to talk to cool people, right? We have cool guests on the show. And to hear their perspective and their understanding, because obviously they're a lot smarter and know a lot more about the gospel than we do. And so to hear from their perspective is really cool. But I think what it's done is it's forced me to double down on the details, you know, the things that work, right? And it's the scripture study, it's the daily prayer, it's taking my church attendance more seriously. Those are the things that have been enhanced because I'm spending a little more time on Come Follow Me. And again, it's not like it's a crazy amount of time. Like I do a little bit every day for my Come Follow Me, and especially in prep for the podcast, all that's done is I have to expand it a little more, where it's like, okay, basically anything in these verses could come up, you know, in the podcast. So I need to be prepared to talk about it if it does.
Yeah.
And so it's forced me to dive a little bit deeper. But it honestly hasn't been that big of a change from my normal daily routine. And maybe it's 20 or 30 more minutes every day, which I guess in a sense turns out to quite a lot by the end of the week, 3 or 4 hours of studying the gospel more than I normally would. And, you know, and it's, but again, it hasn't, I think it just goes to show how small adjustments in your daily spiritual life can make a huge difference. Cause it hasn't been a big adjustment contrary to popular belief, you know, and, it's made a big difference.
I want to focus on two of your biggest influences, two male influences that have meant a lot to you, not just in terms of the type of person that you are today, but from a spiritual side. And
sure.
Obviously one is your dad,
and we'll
get into your dad a little bit more, but the other is your grandpa.
Yeah.
And for those that have seen the TV version of Deep Blue, they have seen this story, and I will tell you, in watching that, it touched me. I felt the Spirit watching that very strongly, so I want you to know that
Thank
I appreciated
you.
That.
I appreciate
For
that.
Those that have not seen that, you were going through a little bit of a faith crisis when you went through a really tough time in your life. Fill people in on that story and what happened to you several years ago.
Sure, and I think I'll kind of just give the watered down version. Obviously, you know, the Deep Blue video team did a really good job of, you know, taking a lot of sporadic and stupid comments that I make in the interview and turn it into a pretty amazing story and tribute to my grandpa and to our family. But yeah, I just had a pretty strong spiritual experience when my grandpa was dying of cancer. One of the stronger ones of my life that I remember that, you know, I had the overwhelming feeling. You know, I think it was the day after Christmas. I was on my knees praying in my aunt and uncle's house where my grandpa was. They had brought him home from the hospital. That, you know, had this overwhelming feeling that he was going to live. Right. And then I felt the spirit speak directly to me that my grandpa was going to live. And I went to bed with a smile on my face that night, knowing that everything was going to be okay. And when I woke up, he was dead. You know, that was, you know, as you can imagine, as a 12-year-old, that was pretty jarring. Because I had just felt like I had just gotten to the point where I was learning how to pray and actually feel the Holy Ghost and receive answers. And then to have that kind of just ripped right out of me. Didn't go well. Made me pretty angry and pretty bitter for a long time. So I was done at that point. I kind of made the decision, well, there's only one reason I would have felt that way, and it wasn't real, and it was, means that, you know, God isn't real. Yeah, I came up with those feelings on my own, inside my own head, and basically just started finding a bunch of reasons for why it was all fake. And, you know, still went to church and did those things because that's what my family did. You know, and I was still under my parents' roof. I wasn't on my own. I wasn't an adult yet. And so my family went to church. So that's what we did. And, you know, the way I describe it was that I was physically active but spiritually inactive. That went on for probably 3 or 4 years, just wanting nothing to do with it. I talk about it a little more in detail on the Deep Blue video, but had a youth leader who moved into the ward who was pretty insufferable at first, and always wanting to try to get to know me and learn about my life. And I was like, why does this old guy care about me? Leave me alone. Through watching him and his example, and obviously the example of my family members and good friends, you know, kind of the transition between my junior and senior year, started to take church a little more seriously, started to read the scriptures a little bit, and had thought in the back of my mind, like, okay, maybe this, I'm kind of seeing the fruits a little bit, you know, through people around me. It's like, okay, maybe this is something. And, you know, that led into the senior year, my friends getting their mission calls and talking about how much they love the gospel. I'm like, okay, maybe I need to figure this out for myself. And, you know, I'd always heard that whether or not you believe it or not, a pretty sure way to figure it out is to serve a mission. You're going to get an answer if you dedicate yourself to it. It's either real or it's not. So submitted my papers and was like, you know what, I'm going to go figure this out. And here we are.
You obviously have a strong testimony today. Do you believe the strength of your testimony today would be possible if you had not gone through that?
Absolutely not. No.
How did that help you to be the person that you are today?
Well, I think there's a concept that I'm continually learning about that I feel like I started to understand through that experience and then also from some pretty tough experiences as a missionary as well. But, you know, Those moments in your life when you feel like your back's against the wall and you have nothing else, there's nothing left, and you start to not care about anything anymore. I think those kind of those deep, dark moments in your life are when a real testimony of the atonement of Jesus Christ is born. You know, it's a concept that I first heard Elder Holland teach about as a missionary, and then I started to make the connections, like, to experiences in my own life where, you know, he basically posed the question and said, how can we have any lasting, moving testimony of the atonement of Jesus Christ if we know nothing of what that experience must have been like on an individual level? Where obviously he experienced it on a world level, so we and he was very quick to emphasize that obviously we have no idea what it was like to experience what Christ went through, but for a moment or two in our lives, we're going to understand what he went through for us specifically. That teeny, tiny, tiny fraction of what he went through as a whole. And, you know, as I've thought more about that, I can look back on some of those key dark moments in my life and be like, okay, you know, that's where I first started to understand the concept of he descended below all things, you know, and so I think, no, your testimony is built off experience and oftentimes negative ones. And so, no, if I hadn't had those challenging experiences, I don't think I would have half the testimony that I have today.
All right, we'll keep our conversation going with Connor Pay. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about your dad a little bit from the spiritual side, but also from the athletic side. We'll get into football and the role that it has played in your life. We'll have more with Connor Pay after this. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hey everyone, Jason Shepherd here to talk about one of our other great podcasts on BYU Radio, Her Why. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. The podcast is hosted by my colleague, Lauren McLean. She interviews coaches like Heather Olmstead, BYU athletes like basketball's Amari Whiting, and legends like soccer star Ashley Hatch. You'll hear stories of triumph, trials, and toughness. If you're a big Cougar fan, you should check out the Her Why podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest today is Connor Pay. And before the break, we were talking about the influences in your life. Yeah. And you can answer this however you would prefer. Because obviously, before the break, we were talking about a lot of things of a spiritual nature.
Sure.
And I'm sure that your dad had a very strong presence on you in terms of from a spiritual sense, but also from a football sense. What type of person is your dad, and what type of influence has he had on your life?
Obviously, a huge influence, right? Huge influence. And I'm not just saying that because of his size. You know, I think, you know, he's the first example I've ever had of what a man is supposed to be. And, you know, now as I'm older, I can look back on some of the experiences I've had with him and see where, you know, and see where I've, those lessons have come. And, you know, I've always known that he was a good person. That was never in question. And I always knew that he had a strong character, but sometimes you don't see the behind the scenes stuff of how hard he's had to work for our family and what he's gone through that, you know, when you have young kids, you can't bring that stuff home.
Right.
You know, and it's everything he's gone through. And so now as an adult to learn more about his life, and obviously he's in the legal world. And so to hear some of the legal battles he's had that could have made or broke his career, you know, and hear things about that, like, man, that's some stressful times, you know, when I was a young kid and I had no idea any of that was going on. And, you know, and so I think he's a man of immense character. And I think the number one way that I've always known that is by the way he treats my mom. You know, I should probably take a lesson, you know, from that. Because, you know, sometimes my mom, she knows me too well. She knows how to get on my nerves. You know, he's always treated her with the utmost respect. And, you know, and that's where I kind of I knew my dad was a good man. And obviously there's all the football stuff too.
He played at BYU, was an offensive lineman as well.
Right, and so I've been connected to BYU and the alumni and everything for years, and you know I'm close friends and consider a lot of my dad's teammates uncles. All right, and you know, to kind of have that network too is a special thing, and you know, and so football was obviously a big way that we bonded growing up, but my dad was very clear to separate football from the rest of our relationship. That was something he wanted to be very clear about. And I remember, you know, when I first started playing tackle football in fifth or sixth grade, he was my coach. And I remember sitting down before like our first practice, and he goes that you got to understand that football and the rest of our life is very different. As in, when we're in between those white lines, he's like, I'm not dad out there. He's like, I'm coach. And he's like, and I need you to treat me like a coach. He's like, and I'm going to treat you like a player. And he said, but we can't bring any of that stuff home. He said, there's got to be a clear line drawn.
It's not easy to do.
No, it's not. It's really not, especially at 11 or 12 or whatever I was, where it's like I'm getting home angry at dinner because dad said mean things to me at practice, right? And he could tell that I'm mad, and he'd be like, what did we say? What did we talk about? He's like, are you bringing it home? And I'm like, ah, sorry, yep, no. But he's like, I'm dad here now. We can talk about it. I'm dad now, right? And he's like, but on the football field, I'm coach. And that's how it was all the way up until high school. When I got to high school, my sophomore and junior year, he wasn't my coach. But my senior year, the O-line coach that we were going to have my senior year ended up getting a great job offer in California. He had to leave. And so we needed someone who could plug. We knew their stuff when it came to offensive line and football and could just plug in. And so my dad became my coach my senior year. So there was a little bit of a break where he wasn't my coach. But I also remember when I think it was maybe my freshman year. I had started to grow a little bit. You know, I was getting to 6'4", 6'5", 250, 260, where I was like, okay, football now is going to be a little different.
Sure.
And it's like now it's like, okay, you're built to play Division I if you want to. And I remember my dad sitting me down and being like, okay, like, do you really want to pursue being a college football player? And he essentially was just like, because I've done it before, I know how to get there, I know how to help you get there, but it's not going to be fun sometimes. And he's like, and I'm going to push you very hard, and you're not going to like it sometimes. He said, so I need you to tell me now whether you want it or not. Because he's like, if you don't want it, if you just want to go to school, move on with your life, he's like, that's totally fine. He's like, but I just need to know. He's like, I need to know where you stand so I know where I need to push and where I need to pull and all that stuff. And I said, no, I want to do it. Like, I feel like I can do it, and I want to do it. And so from then on, it was dedicated. All right, dedicated, and he pushed me hard, you know, and, missed out on a lot socially, you know, because we were training and trying to do things and just trying to give myself an edge. And it ended up working out great. I ended up started varsity as a sophomore, started having a bunch of scholarship offers roll in after my sophomore season, and obviously ended up here. And so my dad plays a huge role in that. So obviously a great, leader for me, not only as the patriarch of our family, but, on the spiritual sense, as he's a bishop now, and I've got to watch him navigate that. And just by the way he treats our family and also the way he's helped me in my football life.
You mentioned how you got to the point where you're starting to get offers and you're starting to get some big offers. I mean, legit schools are coming after you. I think, what, Oregon, USC, UCLA, obviously, BYU, yeah. Utah, I think Utah State as well.
Yeah.
And with your history in the family being at BYU, was it always going to be BYU? Was that decision easy for you?
It was at first, in the sense that Mike Empey was the O-line coach at the time. I had already had a really good relationship with Garrett Touje. Mm-hmm. Mike Empey and Garrett Touje were both teammates of my dad's. I'd known them my entire life. And so then Garrett left with Bronco for Virginia. Then when Mike got hired, I was like, okay, if Mike's there, I'm going there. Like, zero shot, I'm not. And so I committed the summer after my sophomore season to BYU. And then, at the end of my senior year, Coach Detmer and Coach Empey were fired. And obviously both guys that I consider family, you know, and so I was like, whoa, this is all of a sudden this got interesting. And I remember Kalani has always been up front with me from day one, and I've always been up front with him, and that relationship remains the same to this day. And so I remember calling him that night, and I was like, Coach, I don't know anymore. Like, I don't know. Like, this, the deep emotional ties, as much as I love BYU, the deep emotional ties was one of the main reasons why I wanted to come here. You know, because they were not playing well at the time. And it was like, you know, I was like, I was like, Coach, coming to BYU is probably going to be a sacrifice for my future of wanting to play pro, you know, at where we were then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he understood all that. And he was like, look, we're going to go out and get a great coach. He's like, I'm going to keep you updated every step of the way. And then they went out and got one of the premier offensive line coaches in the entire country to come be their OC. And after chatting with Coach Grimes, I was like, you know what? Like, yep. And in that intermediary time, I took visits to other schools. You know, went to Utah, went to USC. I think deep down, Utah knew I wasn't going to go there, so they were kind of like, meh.
A little, you know, half-hearted there?
Yeah, I was kind of like, yeah, you can come if you want. And I'm like, all right, whatever, Coach. Like, kick rocks. I'm going to go 2-0 against you anyways. And, you know, and so, but went to Oregon, went to UCLA, went to USC, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And then when Coach Grimes got hired and Coach Pugh got hired, I remember they came to one of my high school basketball games and got a chance to watch me play, and I got a chance to chat with them after the game. And, you know, and that was the only time outside of my in-home – I can't remember what the rules were back then, but they could, like, come to one basketball game if they wanted to and do, like, one in-home visit or something like that.
Oh, how times have changed.
Yeah, exactly. and so just getting to interact with them and just to hear – Coach Grimes talk about, you know, his NFL pedigree with the offensive line, and Coach Pugh, who was, you know, we didn't know it at the time, but one of the great young offensive line coaches. And I was like, okay, this is great. This is great. And I ended up signing and thankfully got 1 year with him.
Right. Well, and I've got to assume that because of your pedigree and how focused you are at your craft and, you know, sort of the perfection at the offensive line and that being what your dad played and, you know, that was your focus. How rewarding was this past season to be able to get that offensive line back to where you guys all wanted it to be?
It was great, you know, because that's the kind of offensive line I came into, right? And that was the standard Coach Grimes had set, and he had built the 2 years while I was on my mission. And then I came home and got to kind of see the fruits of that in 2020 when we were one of the more dominant offensive lines in the country. And then we kind of rode the coattails of that in 2021 and 2022. And for me to be a starter on those offensive lines was a pretty special thing. And, you know, and then to kind of have the – because I had never experienced that before in 2023, just the struggles that we had and the challenges. And so I kind of had to – was kind of just trying to – I kind of had to learn as we went a little bit, you know, because we'd always had an answer before, and you know, we weren't finding any answers. And for then to have, you know, the coaching change made this year and to have Coach Woods come in, and just after meeting with him, like, okay, this guy can revamp this thing, and he can help me a lot as an individual player too. And he's done exactly that. And, you know, it just felt great again to go out there and impose our will on teams like we had in the past, where, you know, it was when, for the most part this year, we could run the ball when we wanted to run the ball. And obviously had some challenges in a couple games this year, a little bit with that too, but the Big 12 has good defenses.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen sometimes. And but for the most part, we take great pride in that, you know, that we can go, and if we want to, if A-Rod wants to call straight runs, we can do it, you know, and go right down the field. And to get that confidence and that swagger back a little bit was, you know, was a really special thing, really fun.
Well, and with your dad being a former player and you being in the program for as long as you have, how much was it? How exciting was it for you to have your brother Trevor on the team? And then you've got another brother who's just signed with BYU, Austin. I think you made a comment the other day that there's going to be a pay on the BYU roster all the way through like 2031.
Yeah.
That's got to be great, not just for you, but for your entire family.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Because BYU football now, it's, you know, my uncle and my dad both played, you know, at BYU. And so it was a pretty big part of our family.
Sure.
And now it's a huge part of our family. You know, it's become a family affair for us. All my aunts and uncles, cousins, you know, BYU football is, you know, kind of what their fall centers around now, you know, because of that. And now they get to continue that for a long time. You know, it was my brother being on the team was another big reason why I decided to come back for my senior season, because we had never been teammates before.
Mm-hmm. How was it? Was it everything you wanted it to be?
Yeah. He did really well, you know, and it was obviously Trev is a walk-on. And so, you know, him coming in the summer as a walk-on, you're bottom of the barrel. And I tried to make it very clear where he stood, you know, like you got to understand where you're at, man. You're at the bottom. Like everything you're going to get is going to have to be earned. And by week, five or six, he was traveling, you know, he was pretty firmly in the two deep. And obviously me going down with injury helped a little bit, bump him up a little more. But then when I came back, he stayed.
Yeah.
You know, and he's kind of showing Coach Woods that he's dedicated to this. And, you know, he's a young freshman, and within 3 or 4 weeks, he knew the offense better than most of the room. And, you know, and so just kind of to watch him go through that process and to understand where he came from and how hard he'd had to work to get here in the first place. Pretty cool thing. And thankfully it hasn't done any damage to our relationship. I was a little worried about that because he had never seen me on a field before or as a teammate. Obviously I'm very different.
Yeah.
You know, on the field.
Did you have to have the conversation that your dad had, like things that happen on the field, we leave him when we go off the field?
Yes. I did actually. When we would talk on P-Day before his mission, I was kind of prepping him already. Like, dude, like, listen, like, when you get home, because we're roommates too, he moved into my house with me, and I was like, "Look, when I'm probably gonna treat you pretty poorly, like at football. At least it's gonna feel that way."
He's like, "Wait a minute, this is gonna be different from how the rest of our lives?"
Yeah, exactly. No, really, not much different for him. And I was just like, "Cause look, I have to treat you the same as everybody else, you know, as a leader."
Yeah,
and. And honestly, I'm probably harder on him than the other guys just by nature because he's my brother. But and he was like, okay, bring it on. And I was like, okay. And dude, if you have that mindset, it's going to go great. It's going to go great. And I was like, just don't tell mom about anything I say. You know, like that was the other conversation. Like, look, dude, what happens on the prowl, you got to keep it between us, man. Like you can tell dad about some of it, some. But like for the most part,
mom's off limits here. You cannot divulge.
I can't have mom in tears because she realizes how many cuss words I say on the practice field. You know, like we gotta keep that in check. But no, it's been awesome. It's been awesome.
So now that this season is done, your college career has come to an end, and now the next step for you is the National Football League. When you look back at your time at BYU as a collegiate athlete, did you get out of it what you wanted to get out of it?
Absolutely, and more.
In what ways?
You know, you learn about it and you talk about it, kind of the network and the environment that BYU has, and the alumni base. You don't fully understand the support and all the help that BYU can truly offer you until you're in it, you know? And so I think, and especially me having graduated from the Marriott School of Business and the network that comes with, because I honestly believe it's obviously it's a great school. They teach you a lot of great things, but I think one of the reasons why they're one of the most highly ranked business schools in the country is the network. Anybody can teach you business, all right? Not everybody can offer the network that the Marriott School provides. And I think that's you can kind of use that as a symbol for BYU as a whole. The network and the way that the whole fan base embraces the team. And obviously, you know, it's the fan base is extremely passionate, and that hits both ends of the spectrum. When things are going well, man, there's nobody who's going to support you more. When things are not going well, there's nobody that's going to tear you down more. You know, and so, but that comes with the territory, right? Much rather have that than a fan base that's constantly in the middle and not passionate about anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. And there's a lot of those out there.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and so I think, but just also the combination of education with my spiritual life, which is one of the big reasons why, you know, I think BYU is such a special place. You know, the honor code, it's a big thing. You know, I feel like that's a superpower as an athlete. You know, and so I think there's a lot of things that, you know, has made BYU special, and I feel like I've tried to bleed dry all the resources here to you know, just help set me up for life in the future, and BYU's done that for me.
Well, the future certainly looks very bright. Can't wait to see you playing on Sundays. I know there's a lot coming up, getting ready for the National Football League. Connor, thank you so much for doing this. I just want to take this chance. You've always been great to me. Interview requests. You've done a lot of interviews. And I'm sure after practice when you, can you talk with Jason? Can you talk with Shep? And it's like, oh, man, I'd rather just get in the locker room and go home. You've always been willing to do it, and I've appreciated how candid you've been, and you've always been one of my favorites. So thank you so much for everything that you have done in that arena and certainly on the football field as well.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Good luck as you make your way into the pros, and we will certainly all be watching and cheering you on. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, we got to get the plug in, the 2-point conversion. Make sure you tune in wherever you get your podcasts or on the BYU Radio app. You can check out the 2-point conversion with Connor Pay
Mondays
and Chase Roberts on Monday. So there you go. There's your plug, and we do need to do a follow up and see the listenership of this episode versus Chase's.
Yeah.
And then what we need to do is we need to get this thing generating so that you have that on Chase.
I know. I need it.
Okay.
I need it.
Okay. All right. I like it. All right. Connor, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Connor Pay. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.